It's gonna be scary. Not for us.
All engine running. Liftoff.
To Hart on Thompson, steps right, shoots for the win of three. He got it! He got it!
This ain't my first rodeo.
Westbrook to the basket. Turns Schroeder around. Russell Westbrook.
House the three and the lead. You betcha.
Covington, biggest shot of the game, and he hits it. The corner.
PJ Tucker.
Gordon by
Gordon Ranch.
It's time to accomplish something together that we haven't accomplished before.
We both understand that we have one common goal, and that's to win a championship, so.
Let's get it.
What's up, and welcome to another episode of Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. As always, I'm your host, Jackson Gatlin, native Houstonian and the founder slash managing editor of ClutchCityControlRoom.com, your home for all things Houston hoops. You can follow me on Twitter at JT Gatlin. You can follow the show at Locked On Rockets and also the blog at ClutchCityCR. Now, joining us today to recap the Rockets 111-98 Game 2 win against the Thunder, taking a commanding 2-0 series lead, is ESPN 97.5's Salman Ali. Salman, how are you doing today, man?
I'm doing all right. Happy to have you.
All right. So, happy to have me. This is my show, dog. What?
I'm sorry. It's always, I'm mixed up right now.
I know. You feel like you're on the end hosting and then I'm over here hosting. It's always a little weird when you get two podcast hosts together, but you know, a nonchalant, you know what I think that was? That was probably a nonchalant plug for Red Nation Hoops. So if you don't listen to Red Nation Hoops, you absolutely should. But I want to give Salman a chance to plug his other most recent endeavor. Tell us about State of the Rockets really quick before we dive into recapping this game.
Right. So it's basically an email newsletter. You get it once a week, and I'm starting to do more stuff on it. Like after the game, I'll maybe put like a quick post on it. It's basically, it is what it sounds like. It's a state of the team from my perspective, what I'm hearing, what I'm seeing on the court. And I'll give a quick bullet points every week on what I think is the most important thing with the Rockets this week. I'll put some stats in there. I'll put some film in there. It's basically a quick plug-in on the team every week. And it's pretty easy to sign up. It's free. You put your email in, you'll get it every week. And you can unsubscribe anytime you want.
Yeah, I subscribed and I unsubscribed immediately. I was like, this is awful.
Yeah, that's what I would do too. I would unsubscribe right after.
No. I you're one of those plugged in guys when it comes to the team. And absolutely, you know, as soon as I saw that out there, I was like, just like, you know, Rockets film room with Ali Campigiani, I was like, all right, got to subscribe to this. Anytime anybody, you know, around the team has any new content that they're putting out, I'm like, all right, we got to plug this on LOR and we got to make sure other people are plugged in and tuned into this. So definitely look forward to all the work you're doing there. Now, first off, Mr. B. Miller already calling me out with the Chandler Parsons look. All right, my man, look, I went through a quarantine, like Britney Spears phase where I shaved my head. Okay. Right. We did that. And now I have to wear this backwards cap because my hair looks awful right now. So
I didn't even notice it until you pointed it out. You do kind of look like Chandler Parsons right now. I mean,
you know what?
Is that the jersey you have on? Is it a Parsons jersey?
You know what? It's maybe. No, it's not a Parsons jersey. Come on. It's a Harden jersey. Let's go.
Okay.
I wore the black and red on Tuesday. I'm wearing the ketchup and mustard today. So let's dive straight into this. First things first, this just a brief stat overview. This is one of the most balanced scoring approaches by the Rockets that I think I've ever seen, you know, in recent memory. You have James Harden, 21 points, Daniel House Jr., 19 points, Eric Gordon, 15 on some really terrible efficiency. PJ Tucker with 14, Covington, 10. And then off the bench, Jeff Green had 15, Rivers with 11. You had 7 of the 8 Rockets who played scored in double figures. Salman, what stood out to you just right off the bat, kind of first impressions from this win? What stood out to you about the Rockets in this game?
Their defense. It's a kind of a continuation of game one, but their defense has been so impressive. I don't want to get too much into coaching criticisms right now, but Billy Donovan has not coached a great series. Like, his players do not look prepared to attack a switching defense. And that goes from Shai Gilgeous-Alexander to Chris Paul to, and that's weird. Chris Paul should be able to know how to attack this. Chris Paul, Dennis Schroeder, all Gallo tonight struggled. I mean, all their main guys do not know how to attack a switching defense. And they just look completely unprepared out there. Like, they knew the Rockets were going to do this. I guess, you know what it is? I think it's the fact that they haven't played the Rockets this year in this current form. You know, they played the old Rockets, the one with Clint Capela. This is a totally different team. Half the roster got changed around. They're playing a different style. They're finally leaning into switching everything again, which they did 2 years ago, but they haven't done since. They kind of tried to play a drop back scheme with Clint Capela, but now they're going back to their roots, what they're best suited for. and it's flustered the hell out of the Thunder. It's worked really well these first two games.
Definitely. You know, and I think one thing that we're noticing is the Thunder in those previous matchups with the Rockets, right? They were able to kind of target Clint Capella on switches, Chris Paul especially, kind of getting Clint Capella switched out to the perimeter. And then you have this opportunity to take advantage of a big. You don't have that anymore because there are no bigs anymore.
No.
And, you know, an interesting thing too is so far in two games now, the first game, you had Danilo Gallinari, had himself a game, 29 points, 9 of 17 shooting, really had a solid game overall. And in this one, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, basically the exact same offensive stat line, 9 of 17 shooting, had 31 points. So it's not like the Thunder aren't getting some production out of their big four, if you want to call them that. But they're just not getting enough all-around production. I do want to quickly shout out Sean, who asked that we record this. This is being recorded. So this will be tomorrow's podcast. So definitely, this is getting recorded. This will be tomorrow's Locked on Rockets podcast. So no worries there, Sean. Now, as far as the defense goes, one thing that we're seeing so much of out there, and this was a concern for a lot of people, myself included, going into the playoffs, is we're seeing Ben McLemore, even though he's still getting targeted by the OKC Thunder offense, we're seeing the Rockets do an incredible job of masking him and kind of trying their best to hide him defensively with rotations and, you know, making sure even if he gets beaten off the dribble, the Rockets are rotating so quickly to cut off that drive, and then they're rotating around the perimeter to stop open shooters. I mean, am I alone in the sympathy that this is one of the best defensive showings that we've seen from the Rockets ever?
I mean, it's a strong, I mean, you're talking in the Harden era, or are you talking,
I'll tell you what, and fine, not ever, we'll go last 3 years, like this team since stepping into the bubble has been able to win games with defense.
It's the best I've seen since they had Chris Paul. I'll say that it's definitely since that 65 win team. It's the best they've played defensively since that season. They just look so sharp. And the point on Ben McLemore is pretty important because they no longer have to cover for another bad defender out there. Russ is out. This gives them a little bit more freedom to play defensively the way they want to play. They pretty much only have to worry about Harden and McLemore out there defensively. Everybody else can defend. Everybody else is fine. Like they'll get away with what they want to get away with on defense. And their communication's been good. Like and the way they're playing defense, like the first game, I kind of noticed it, but I didn't ask the question. Another reporter did. They're having players sag off a little bit, and they're playing a little bit of it looks like a zone, but it's not. It's still a switching defense. So basically for a non-shooter, they'll have that guy sag out into the lane a little bit and help out and protect the lane. And it's worked really well. It's suffocating the hell out of them. Again, that big four you talked about, Gallo, Dennis Schroeder, Chris Paul, and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, you really only need two of those guys to not have their night. For you to really be successful defensively. Tonight, that was Chris Paul and Danilo Gallinari. And, you know, Shai Gilgeous and Chris Paul. Not, who else had a good game today? I know two guys had good games today.
It was Shai, and it was Gallo a little bit. I mean, 17 points, right. But it kind of some so-so efficiency, just 5 of 12 shooting. But Dennis Schroeder had a better game than he did. But, you know, overall, you've got those four guys who are all, you know, hovering right around 17 points per game. And so you've got Shai, who had, you know, the monster 31, but then you have, you know, Chris Paul, who just had 14. You've got Gallo with, you know, he hit 17, but it feels like they just don't have the offensive firepower to keep up with the Rockets when they're rolling on all cylinders.
Somebody just said this is the best they played defensively since Luke's shoulder injury. Yeah, maybe. Like when they had Luke and Bamute, they had 4+ defenders on the floor at all times. We're talking Trevor Ariza, PJ Tucker, Luke and Bamute, and Chris Paul. And Harden was pretty much the only guy you had to look out for, and you can hide him on any bad offensive player. And now they can kind of do some sort of proximity of that. Like, I'm not sure if you want to say Jeff Green is as good defensively as some of those guys, but I mean, he's done a pretty good job on the smalls for OKC. That's something I was worried about. Like can this Houston Rockets team defend the quickness of those guards? And so far they've done a pretty good job, and they've been able to play Daniel House pretty successfully. I was worried about that because Daniel has been kind of up and down defensively, especially with the quick guards, and he's been someone who's been good.
You know, he definitely, and I want to highlight his defense coming up here in just a second. But absolutely, I agree with you on the point about Jeff Green, the fact that his defense too, along with Ben McLemore, were some big question marks. How were those guys going to look up against some of the staunch playoff competition? But so far, by and large, two games in, I've been impressed with the overall team defense and even at times the individual defense from both of those guys not being used and abused on switches and things like that. So coming up, I do want to talk about the defense a bit more, talk about some of those guys. I also want to know who was the kind of the player of the game, the key player for the Houston Rockets from you in just a moment, Salman. But first, I want to let you guys know that you can start the morning with the news that matters in just 10 minutes from Axios Today host Nyla Boodoo and a team of award-winning journalists will bring you the latest analysis, insight, and trends into our world in this daily little 10-minute podcast that I think you guys should totally check out. Incorporate it into your morning. Put it right before this podcast. Put it right after this podcast. I don't care as long as you still listen to this podcast, but definitely worth checking out. And also a quick word from our friends over at DoorDash. So I don't know about you guys, but I sometimes wake up a little late in the morning, not enough time to whip up some breakfast or even stop somewhere for breakfast, McDonald's or whatever. And I get to work and I'm there for like an hour, right? Maybe 2 hours in tops. And suddenly my stomach starts rumbling. I'm hungry. And guess what I do? I pull out my phone and I start working the DoorDash app, right? DoorDash is so easy. It's super easy to bust out the phone. You can see all the places around you. You can get, tacos, you can get burgers, whatever you want delivered directly to your door. And right now, our listeners can actually get $5 off and zero delivery fees on their very first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and enter code LOCKEDONNBA. So if you're busy with chores, you're running errands, you're having an argument with whoever you're hanging out with, one person wants tacos, one person wants burgers, whatever, you can open up DoorDash. You can both get exactly what you want and you can do it with zero delivery fees. So don't forget, that's code LOCKEDONNBA for $5 off your first order and zero delivery fees over $15. So keeping this conversation rolling along with ESPN 975 Salman Ali. Salman, I want to know, looking at, so you highlighted the fact that the Rockets right now, they only have, with historically, it's been James Harden and 4+ defenders. And I think that's what we're seeing right now is even at times they've had 5+ defenders on the court because when you put Ben McLemore out there, he's the one guy whose defensive instincts are kind of maybe a bit more askew, not as great as the other four on the court.
He takes the Gerald Green role, right?
He does. Absolutely. And I think that's been such a big component is one, you've got Harden who has absolutely stepped up his defense. And then two, you've got Ben McLemore who's now filling that Gerald Green role and is the only defensive liability out there at times now that you don't have Russell Westbrook in this series.
Right. And the point about Daniel House, I mean, I hate to talk about this guy so much, but I mean, he just played so freaking, he was hustling like crazy tonight, going after every loose ball, getting deflections.
He's my game MVP. Do you think that's fair? Is he possibly your game MVP if you have to pick one?
No, I would agree. He had 19 points, 9 rebounds, shot the ball well, I think. I mean, he was just like, you felt him all over the game. And, this is a night where Harden struggled. He didn't shoot the ball well. And the Rockets needed other guys to step up. And those bench units brought a crazy amount of energy. It's been a huge plus for them in the playoffs so far. The bench units of Jeff Green, Eric Gordon, Daniel House. I know those guys aren't technically bench players, but when Harden is on the bench, those guys
the Hardenless minutes, right? So it's not necessarily bench players, but just the points in the game where you're missing the existence of Harden. To shout out Marcus really quick. When are we going to see more Carroll? I'm going to have to go out on a limb and say probably never. Look, Roosh Williams isn't here to defend Carroll this week, but so I hate to dash anybody's hopes, but this 8-man rotation that we're seeing right now with Green, McLemore, and Rivers off the bench, it's going to be those three guys as well as, more than likely one of either Eric Gordon or Daniel House Jr. That kind of remains to be seen which one of those guys is going to get the bump and go back to the bench when Russell Westbrook is back. But that moving forward is likely your 9-man rotation, barring any catastrophic injury or missing somebody for extenuating circumstances. That is going to be your 9-man rotation moving forward.
And now, that should be enough. I mean,
it should be.
And going back to the minutes without Harden, that was something going into the series that if you're a Rockets fan, you had to be worried about, especially without Russ. There was nobody out there to carry those units anymore. You needed Eric Gordon to step up. You needed Austin Rivers to step up. And today, Austin Rivers stepped up.
We need to talk about that segment at the top of the second quarter where he had back-to-back threes and then the monstrous slam that was just – absolutely incredible to see. And not only that, but he has had some excellent defense against the really, you know, the quickie, twitchy guards of OKC, specifically just moments, you know, especially Schroeder, but also some possessions on SGA, definitely on Chris Paul himself. You know, Austin Rivers' defense at the guard spot is so, I don't want to say it's understated, but he does such a great job of keeping his defender in front of him, keeping his chest in front of his defender to where they never get an easy drive directly to the basket. He's always closing off those driving lanes, you know, with just the quick lateral movement that he has. You know, he's just a high IQ defensive player at that guard spot. So definitely want to give him the credit there. Let's talk for a second about Lu Dort. And he actually, like, surprisingly, I was kind of 50-50 on how much I wanted to believe he was going to be an impact player in this series, but he had some stretches where he made Harden look uncomfortable, you know, handling the ball and really made him work for his shot, right?
You know what it reminded me of? Do you remember that first year the Rockets got Harden and they were going up against OKC and the Rockets were throwing out this scrappy player named Patrick Beverley? You know, nobody really knew who he was, right? And they were throwing him up against Russell Westbrook, and Russell Westbrook was kind of insulted at the idea that this guy could defend him. But he did a pretty good job, made a name for himself in that series. This is kind of what this reminds me of. This is somebody we have to watch moving forward. Really, really strong defensively. He's got a kind of a Marcus Smart kind of body. He's kind of thick.
Yeah, 250, about 215, 220, 6'3", 6'4", that combo guard kind of build. Very similar, you know, like you say Marcus Smart, very similar to Eric Gordon. Almost that kind of build, stocky, low center of gravity. He's got a 6'9" wingspan, so he's got some length there as well. Yeah. But above all else, he's got that perfect blend of speed and strength and good defensive IQ. Some of the plays that he made, like think about the Jeff Green drive where Jeff had the easy layup going in that first possession, and then the very next possession, Lu Dort read the play beautifully and slipped over and took the charge on Jeff Green. That's just high defensive IQ. That's being in the right place at the right time and knowing what play is coming after seeing it just, you know, 30 seconds before.
And I wonder if OKC kind of rushed him back, because after game one, like let's say OKC wins game one, like he was listed on the injury report as of this morning as out. Like he was out, and then they updated him to questionable pregame, and then they put him in the game. And you just kind of wonder if the series was 0-1 in favor of the Thunder, like would they have decided to throw out Lu Dort this early? My guess would be no. This was kind of a break in case of emergency, last minute kind of thing. He's played really well on Harden. I think Harden's going to adjust, but I mean that's part of the playoffs, right? Adjustments, right? Having Lu Dort play in this game is kind of one of the Thunder's forms of adjustment on defense, right? They had no answer for Harden, especially when they play with that three-guard unit of Dennis Schroeder, Chris Paul, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Gallo, Steven Adams. Like, who out there is going to defend James Harden? Nobody of note. I mean, Dennis Schroeder tried tonight, and Harden...
Keyword being tried.
Yeah, I mean, he really got going. I mean, and this is kind of what I'm talking about with Billy Donovan. Like, when you're in that kind of a moment... Like, at this point in the series, I'm matching every one of Lu Dort's minutes with Harden's minutes. Like, he is not – like, there is not going to be a minute where Harden's on the floor where Lu Dort's not on the floor. And I thought that was a mistake at the end.
No, I mean, definitely. And the issue then becomes, right, and even, you know, the broadcasting crew talked about it, is it becomes a trade-off of offense versus defense, right? And we saw that years ago back during the 2016-2017 series with Andre Roberson, who in the league at that point was probably the best individual one-on-one James Harden defender to that point. And you had to make some trade-offs. You had to make sacrifices offensively where, okay, do you want to try and contain Harden, or do you, you know, want to be able to actually score the ball offensively? Because you look at Dort, he shot just 2 of 8 from downtown. You know, after I think he missed what, his first 5 in a row, possibly.
Right. Yeah. I mean, he's very Marcus Smarty, right? And that's kind of what I think what you talked about with the trade off is pretty smart. In that, I think I would do it. Like, I think you're not going to beat Houston in a shootout. Like, listen, that 5-man unit was really great and all throughout the regular season. It was really cute. This is the playoffs, right? Like, you have to make adjustments on the fly. I recognize that the Thunder have gotten pretty attached to that unit. I'm not saying abandon it, but adjust it and have Lu Dort find a way to fit in Lu Dort in there somehow. Maybe have Gallo play center. Then you can play those three guards out there with Lu Dort and Gallo. I mean, then that's not a bad unit. I I still think you can score pretty effectively, and I still think defensively you need to match Lu Dort up with Harden as much as you can. Now, if you're the Rockets, you need to set some screens to get Lu Dort off of Harden.
Oh, absolutely. You know, his sticking ability, and one thing that you notice, especially, and you'll look at it with defenders like Patrick Beverley, Draymond Green, Lu Dort in this game, those really gritty defenders who pride themselves on defense. Watch every single time that James Harden lines up for an out-of-bounds play, Lu Dort is right there leaning into his shoulder, like digging into his body, making him know that he is right there. And it's not lazy defense. That takes effort every single possession to want to be that locked in defensively. And you saw it bothering Harden occasionally. There were some plays where Harden's lined up waiting for the inbounds, and he's just like, you know, trying to knock Lu Dort off of him.
Right.
And it's those types of possessions where suddenly, you know, Lu Dort, if he's in the right place at the right time, maybe embellishes, you know, the contact a little bit. Maybe James gets a frustration offensive foul called on him. And that's, you know, suddenly then he's able to be or unable to be as aggressive defensively or even offensively. And all that can be kind of a snowball effect that starts with Lu Dort and the way that he plays defense on James Harden. Now, I do want to continue talking about this, and I have some numbers that I want to pull up here in just a moment. About, you know, this fourth quarter, I didn't separate the specific nightmare lineup, the three guard lineup, but just some numbers here for the fourth quarter. The Thunder throughout the fourth only posted a 90.9 offensive rating. Their defensive rating was a horrendous 159.1 in that fourth quarter. So the 12 minutes there, you know, Chris Paul basically played the entire fourth, 10 and a half minutes. Dennis Schroeder played 11 and a half minutes of that fourth quarter. So, you know, that's kind of a distinct difference compared to the fourth quarter in game one, where they opted to run that nightmare lineup, but they did it with Mike Muscala in place of Steven Adams. And I'm really surprised that we didn't see that again, because I know that we already covered the fact that it's really tough to beat the Rockets in a shootout, but that lineup with Mike Muscala in alongside, you know, in place of Steven Adams for that nightmare lineup had like a 150 something offensive rating, and they actually played some pretty decent defense. Now, whether or not that was, you know, the Rockets just missing shots or whether that was that lineup actually succeeding defensively, I think that we're going to need to see from OKC. They're going to have to make a decision as to whether or not Steven Adams can actually be out there on the court, or even to a lesser extent, Nerlens Noel, because of the spacing that the Rockets have. There were times where they were able to successfully get that switch with Adams out on the perimeter, or Jeff Green was able to attack Adams directly off the dribble, and it never ends well for OKC.
And I think they tried to feed the ball to Steven Adams in the deep post at the beginning of the game. And I thought that was a pretty smart strategy. But Steven Adams, after a while, he just gets gassed. I mean, like, he's having to chase all these players around. The Rockets like to run the ball. I mean, this is a question going into the series, right? A lot of people ask this question. How much can you get away with playing Steven Adams? I'm not sure. Somebody in the chat just said, hey, guys, who should start? Who should close games for Houston at point guard? And why should it be Chris Clemens? Going back to Houston, closing lineups for OKC, I think you have to figure out a way to get Lu Dort in there. But I think those minutes where Harden's on the bench, I think you throw out that three-guard lineup. Maybe you can throw out Muscala. I'm not sure how much you can get away with playing Muscala in crunch time. But in those minutes where Harden's on the bench and you're just playing against that bench unit, might be a smart strategy to go ahead and go all in on your favorite lineup. That's like 12 minutes a game. It's not like it's nothing. You're talking about 12 minutes a game with that three guard lineup. You can get some pretty productive minutes out there. Again, the Rockets theoretically they should be in the red in these minutes. They should be losing these minutes. The fact that they're winning these minutes so substantially is a huge plus for them. I did not expect that from them. Like I thought they would bleed when Harden sat on the bench. And the fact that the Rockets have been able to get so much production from their bench is a surprise. It's a surprise to me. I think it's a surprise to a lot of people covering the game.
Keeping this conversation rolling along here with Salman Ali from ESPN 97.5. Really quick, you know, my thing is, where does OKC go from here, right? You have a game where Harden and Gordon shoot a combined 2 for 21. 2 of 21. That's 10% shooting, and that's me rounding up. It's actually 9.5% shooting, but I'm rounding up. I'm being nice to them. 10% shooting from beyond the arc from them. Now, yes, the rest of the team shot a really amazing 17 of 35 for 49%, but if OKC can't take advantage of the more than likely one game where Harden's going to be just abysmal from behind the arc, and then Eric Gordon did the exact opposite of everything that I prided him for in game one, where he is a guy who can easily, you know, I said this before, he's a guy who easily can get a volume of, you know, 10 to 12, even 15 3-point shots up in a given game. But he didn't do that in game one. He focused on being aggressive, making these really decisive drives, getting into the teeth of the OKC defense, getting to the free throw line, playing really, really good basketball since his shot has been MIA. And he shot 2 of 6 as well. So even then, his shot looked like it was maybe coming back a little bit. But he is now 6 of his last 31 3-point attempts. That's 19% from behind the arc. So that's the two games, the two seeding games, and the first two playoff games. So where does Oklahoma City go from here? You know, if you're OKC, try to put yourself in their shoes. What are you telling yourself right now? You had a game where Harden, you know, played poorly, Gordon played poorly, and the rest of the team still dropped the hammer on you for four, to the tune of, you know, 17 of 35 from behind the arc for 49%. What do you do moving forward?
So we started the show talking about how Houston has surprised us defensively, right? And the reason they've surprised us is they haven't played up to this level all year, right? Like they played in spurts, right? They'll have moments where they're really good, like 2 or 3 games here and there, but they haven't done it for a consistent stretch.
Or even in the confines of a single game, sometimes you'll have like a really phenomenal quarter and then the rest of the game falls apart defensively. They really haven't been able to put it together for a full 48.
Right. But over the long haul, you would agree, you would characterize them as an inconsistent defense, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. So there are ways to make an inconsistent defense play. There are ways to attack a switching defense. Stan Van Gundy talked about it on Game 1 of the broadcast. OKC is not even moving. Like, you have to do a ton of body movement off the ball to be able to make these the switch defense, like, make mistakes. Make them make a miscommunication. Make them get an open shooter. Like do something to make them mess up off the ball. And they're not doing that. They're just like, they run 22.5% of their offense through pick and roll. That's not going to work here. When you switch, like, that's like when you're good at switching, that's the best way to defend a pick and roll. It's by far the best way. We've learned this over the past 4 years. That's why the Warriors were so effective at it. They were able to make everybody kind of isolate and slow the game down. And, you know, OKC, you can't do that anymore. Like, you have to do stuff, creative stuff off the ball to force mistakes. You have to do, like, on the ball, you have to do slips from screens. Like, you have to have your big man slip before the screen comes. Mm-hmm. You have to do kind of like small
we,
stuff.
We
like,
even saw that a few times throughout the game, but just they're not doing it enough. You know, we saw a right. couple times where Gallo slipped a screen or Adams slipped a screen and, you know, it resulted in easy two, but they're not doing it nearly as much as they need to be doing to actually take advantage of the defense.
Right. Houston's not impenetrable. Like, there are ways to break this defense, but they're not doing it. And it requires a lot more effort on their part. And that's kind of why, getting back to the criticism of Billy Donovan, he's not coached a good series in any respect. That they do not look well prepared, and no, you know, and they still have time to make adjustments, but it has to happen now. You're down 2-0.
Credit to, and here's the thing too, is credit to Mike D'Antoni. I think one of the biggest criticisms, you know, usually with MDA is, you know, his timeout management and you know, some of the, you know, whether or not he's, you know, letting his players kind of just go with the feel of the game versus actually stepping in and saying, no, there's a run going. You know, I got to get my guys' heads right, whatever. I feel like his timeout management across these first two games has been excellent. The way that he's used them to kind of stem the bleeding, you know, kind of to regroup his troops a little bit. It's felt noticeably different from MDA's standpoint. And so to this point, I think he's absolutely outcoached Billy Donovan so far in this series. And right. Now the Thunder are looking, you know, they're down in an 0-2 hole. And things are not looking good for them. My original prediction was Rockets in 6. And it's starting to look like they might even be able to pull off Rockets in 5 just with how well they've played across these first two games. And absolutely, there's going to be adjustments made by OKC coming back again into Game 3. But what was your original prediction going into this series?
I had Rockets in 6 too.
Okay. You know, and as we're kind of approaching, I have a couple more questions here that I want to cover with you, Salman. But for the chat, for anybody listening, if you guys have questions, this is also kind of be the part of the live where I want to open up to the chat. Now, if there's another Chris Clemens question, I think we've hit our cap on Chris Clemens questions for the night, as well as potentially Jamari Carroll. But if you have questions, go ahead and, you know, throw them out there. But really quickly, I want to know a bit about Mike D'Antoni talked post game about Russell Westbrook. Can you kind of recap what he was discussing there and kind of his thoughts about, you know, whether or not he plans on sitting Russ, you know, potentially even more because the Rockets are now up 2-0 in the series?
I think that's the plan. I mean, this gives you a cushion. I mean, you're up 2-0. What's the rush? Like, okay, OKC wins a game. So what? You're still up 2-1. Like, there is absolutely no reason to rush him back. Quad injuries are tricky. You know, you never really know how a player is going to respond to that. It really is up to the player. He's been doing a ton of strength and conditioning off the court, but I mean, it really depends on how he feels when he tries jumping and moving with that quad off when he gets back on the court. And so far, I mean, I don't know why you feel the need to rush him. I mean, if I were Mike D'Antoni, at the very least, I would not rush him back to game three. Like right now, he's out as far as I'm concerned. I mean, he's out for game three.
Yeah, you know, I kind of pegged him as being back potentially around the game three mark, maybe the game four mark, partially because this is just that series where you really, I feel like from Russ's standpoint, really wants to play against his former team and take part in at least, you know, one or two of the games to potentially eliminate his former team, at least. Talking to the host of Locked On Thunder about that, you know, just Russ's personality. He's a competitor. He's one of the fiercest competitors in the game. And having a chance to beat the team that he used to play for, even though he's got all the love in the world for Oklahoma City, they're his opponent right now. They are the team in front of him and stopping him from achieving his ultimate goal and Harden's ultimate goal of winning a championship. And so I think he absolutely wants to be out there on the court, but if it's the organization's decision to keep him off the court and keep him fresh and healthy, look, the best thing that could happen, right, best case scenario for the Rockets is they knock out OKC in potentially four or even, you know, five games. You just get the series done with early, and then you have the Lakers Trailblazer series go six or even seven games, because then you're buying Russ even more time to rest and prepare for that series. So
can I ask you a question?
Yeah, go for it, man.
So when you were making your rock in six prediction, like I assumed that he was not going to play for the rest of the series. Was that kind of your baseline assumption going in?
My baseline assumption was that he was going to be back by game three or four when I made the Rockets in six prediction. I was very taken aback by both the way that their defense has played so far in the series, which I think everybody has been surprised by that. I thought it was going to be decent, and I was more concerned about the offense, but legitimately their defense has been dominant for stretches. So there's that. But then it was also the bench production that has just been so far tremendous. You know, you've had in game one, you had McLemore and Green step up considerably. In this game, you had Green step up again. You had great contributions from Austin Rivers. Somebody wanted to point out that Ben McLemore didn't have a great game. I will say that, you know, Ben, his production, you know, a little lacking in this game, just 2 of 6 shooting, you know, had the 6 points off the bench. Not a phenomenal game from Ben, but at the same time, it was just one of those where once Austin started getting it going and had his success, I think MDA just kind of rode the hot hand in that one. Kind of how in game one, Austin saw the least amount of minutes of the three bench guys. In this game, Rivers got more minutes than McLemore in this one. So I don't think it's necessarily Ben had a bad game, but I just think that MDA chose to ride a different hand in this one. Now, kind of I want to hit on some of these questions really quickly. Let's do this. So is there an argument that MDA is the best coach in the West?
I still like Rick Carlisle, and I still like Doc Rivers as two coaches I would probably favor over Mike D'Antoni, but he's right there. I mean, he's coached a hell of a playoff so far.
I'd put him there as well. I like those two names that you mentioned. Here's the thing. Until he retires, Greg Popovich is, I think, still the undisputed best coach in the Western Conference.
I think he's talking about the playoffs.
Okay. So if we go playoffs, then yeah, I like those two. I would maybe put Rick Carlisle slightly ahead. If you've been watching the Clippers, Mavericks game so far, some of the coaching adjustments that Carlisle does, he's been having a great fantastic series. You know, really fantastic coach. He stuck through Dallas all the way through the championship years, you know, into the rebuild and now back into them being competitive again with Luka and with KP. So kudos to him. He's done a phenomenal job with that organization.
Rick Carlisle is a really great in the game adjustment kind of coach. Mike D'Antoni's a better game to game kind of coach. Like he's better at, like, there's a gap in between games. Let's make this tiny adjustment before game three or whatever. And that's kind of the coach he is. And Rick Carlisle is a little quicker and he'll make that adjustment in the game. See it, he'll make it on the fly, and the players react to it pretty well.
Yeah, and I think that's one of, if there is another criticism, it's kind of going to be one of those. MDA has a really phenomenal first punch as a coach, but it's those, you know, in-game decisions where, okay, the first punch didn't quite land, what do you do next? You know, how do you react in-game to those decisions? And that's the one where there's been some question marks over the years. Now, our next question, slightly serious, does Russ actually listen to Iron Maiden? I'm going to go yes. I could picture Russ headbanging into some Iron Maiden, you know, as he's doing some pregame warmups or something. What do you think? Does he actually listen to Iron Maiden or no?
I don't know what that is.
It's a band. Come on. He was wearing the Iron Maiden tank top during the game. So
listen, I'm pretty out of it with the music as far as I'm. I listened to music from 2010 to 2014. Like that's it. Like that like those 4 years. There's like 200 songs there. I rotated in and out. I'm there. That's all I need.
All right, that's fair. One thing, what do we have here? What do we got? Another question. Here we go. What is MDA going to do when Russ gets back? The bench seems very smooth with Jeff as the point center. I'll let you take the lead on this one really quickly.
Yeah, so some of what Mike D'Antoni is doing is kind of
He's Mike D'Antoni now. Sorry.
Yeah, Mike D'Antoni. Yeah, some of what Mike D'Antoni is doing is kind of a luxury. He doesn't need Austin Rivers to do what he's doing. He doesn't need Jeff Green to do what he's doing, right? Like, these are options he's kind of having to go to because he doesn't have Russ. He'd rather have Russ, right? Like, I think he'd rather have those guys take a step back. Like, Austin Rivers, you're going to see his production kind of tail off when Russ comes back. Like, that's an obvious person who kind of gets lost in the fold a little bit because that guard rotation is pretty deep. I mean, you're talking James Harden, Russell Westbrook, Eric Gordon, and then there's not much breathing room after that. I mean, Ben McLemore is a pretty good off guard kind of guy, but I mean, after that,
because he doesn't need the ball in his hands, he can get his options, you know, curling off screens, and he spaces the floor, you know, significantly better than Rivers does as a better 3-point shooter. So,
and Austin doesn't really need to do that, and I think the Rockets pretty much view him as a defensive kind of guy to throw off the bench, and as like he's kind of a 3-and-D kind of point guard, which is kind of a weird way to describe him. He's only like a 35% shooter, but that's the way the Rockets use him off the bench. And as far as Jeff Green as a point guard, I mean, they're doing that because they want to find spots for Harden to rest, and Harden needs spots to rest because he doesn't have Russell Westbrook to do those.
I will say, kind of concerning this before we move on to our next question, I do want to say that I think that even when Russ comes back, I think the dynamic that we've seen, the chemistry that we've seen develop between Jeff Green and Harden will still be there. I think that we're still going to see some possessions where you've got Jeff Green maybe bring the ball up the court to initiate the offense,
right?
or you know, the pick and roll that we've been seeing. That chemistry has developed so quickly in such a short amount of time, but he gives you that really versatile big who can, you know, continue to create for himself after the initial, you know, breaking down of the defense by James Harden off the pick and roll. Then James can dump the pass down, you know, to Jeff Green, and he continues to create either in the form of, you know, getting his own shot at the rim where he's shooting, you know, a career best like 80% or something right now, or he's, you know, kicking it out, making the right read of the defense and getting it out to an open shooter. So I think that chemistry, that dynamic duo is still going to continue to coexist. But I do think that once Russ is back, I agree with Salman, we'll see Russ handle the ball quite a bit more and be much more in charge of the offense than we're seeing from Jeff Green, you know, Eric Gordon, Austin Rivers, those guys right now who are stepping up in his absence.
You want to take this question from Skillia?
Yeah, let's do this. You know, is this the norm for Jeff Green? Have we bought into Jeff Green completely yet? Do we think it's a fool's gold or not?
So every fan base in the league buys into Jeff Green right away because he has stretches like this where he's averaging like 15 and 10 or whatever, right? And he'll play really well. And you see moments where it's like, why isn't every team in the NBA trying to sign him, right?
Yeah.
And it's one of those things where he's really up and down, man. And you saw some of this towards the end of the regular season. It didn't get that much attention because those games didn't matter as much. But Jeff Green's production kind of tailed off there. But yeah, I mean, like you're going to get a lot of up and down performances from him. You're going to get a lot of 15 and nines, and you're going to get a lot of 4 and 6s. You know, it's the roller coaster. That's the Jeff Green roller coaster.
It is the Jeff Green roller coaster, but I will throw it in there with the caveat of this is also the first time that we've gotten to see Jeff Green fulfill this role for a team, right? Is he's traditionally been used as a wing player, you know, even talking about it on the broadcast, they've referenced for any other team, he'd be, you know, a small forward, maybe, you know, at the 4 spot in today's NBA, but for this team, he gets to be the backup 5. He gets to be the point center at times, and it allows him to have mismatches where at this point in his career, you know, it's so much easier for him to guard and take off the dribble. So both defensively and offensively, a Steven Adams type or a Danilo Gallinari type or a Nerlens Noel, and that's a favorable matchup for him rather than be up against some of the smaller, quicker, you know, forwards that we're seeing at the 3 and 4 spots these days.
Yeah, that's a good point. Cleveland tried some of this stuff with Jeff Green. They put him at forward and center, and he found some of his best success in Cleveland. And I think this is probably what, like, as far as Jeff Green moving forward, this is probably what other teams are going to do with him, right? Like, this is his role moving forward. He's found the best success of his career as a center. He moves kind of old man-ish. Like, have you ever seen him take a pump fake? Like, it's very... It's very slow, right?
Like, and everything he does is a little methodical.
Right. Yeah, and that's good for beating centers off the dribble. You can't beat small forwards off the dribble in today's NBA like that. But in this current role, it's perfect. As a small ball center, he's really, really good.
Yeah, definitely. And here's my thing is I hope that, you know, the Rockets are able to keep him back for one more season, you know, ideally on like a vet minimum deal, bring him back next year because he's found a lot of success here in Houston. And I think that, you know, next season, especially moving into the last year of PJ Tucker's deal, since it seems like small ball is here to stay, you know, if you could anchor the five spot for an entire season with those two guys that each get, you know, 24 to 26 minutes a night, that would be a great way to rest PJ Tucker throughout the regular season rather than riding him for these long 34, 36, 38 minute nights, you know, in the regular season when you know that you've got to keep him fresh for the playoffs. Because there's some data that I've talked about that I've backed up on the show before. When PJ Tucker isn't getting rest when he's playing these high level minutes, his shot goes down and his percentages fall, they plummet. So, you know, getting him the rest that he needs consistently throughout a season and keeping him fresh while he's battling these bigs down low is so important. And I think Jeff Green could be a guy that does that moving forward. So,
and he's pretty banged up right now. PJ Tucker's got a neck thing going on. Like
he's got the hand, like it's just...
No, I mean, and the hand thing is related to the net. Like, apparently, there are moments where he can't feel his hand. And I'm just like, what the hell? Like,
why haven't you told anybody about this? It's his right hand. It's his shooting hand. So, how can you expect the guy to be a consistent 3-point threat when he can't even feel his hands at times? So, you know.
And I'm just like, how do these stories consistently, year after year, get buried into the postseason? It's not just the Rockets. Every single team in the NBA hides injuries. And then during the postseason, you'll see somebody come out with an ice pack on his shoulder. And it's like, apparently this guy had
Paul George. You don't have to say somebody.
Right. I mean, it's like, apparently this guy had a shoulder issue this whole time and he didn't tell anybody. Like this is just what it is. Teams hide injuries as they get closer to the postseason. And then once it comes postseason time, you kind of have to explain those bad possessions and those bad games. And the only way you can explain it is just by telling the truth. Yeah, I'm hurt. Like I've been dealing with this since March and I didn't tell anybody.
All right, we'll take one more question here from Scalia. So, you know, should D'Antoni, wow, you did this to me. Should D'Antoni stay if this, you know, if they keep this type of style and if it seems to work, at least right now? I think he's here. I don't think they're going to have time to, you know, hunt for a new head coach this offseason. I think D'Antoni's here to stay. You know, there's been so much talk about, you know, is this his last season, you know, with the Rockets? Is he gone after the season? I think he's here. You know, I think that, you know, it's so rare for an organization to find a coach, a general manager, an owner who are all in sync about what they want to do, what the product that they want to put on the court, the style of basketball that they want to play, that it makes the most sense for D'Antoni to stay here moving forward with Houston.
Yeah, and I wrote about this mid-season before the shutdown, and Daryl actually responded to that, and he was like, this is like a media narrative, like this is not actually a thing. We, the front office and Mike D'Antoni, don't hate each other, and I think what it is they just weren't able to hammer out a deal in the offseason. Sometimes that happens. You know, like Billy Donovan's on the last year of his contract. Nobody talks about that. I mean, the only reason people talk about it with Houston is because there's just been a lot of drama surrounding the contract negotiations. You know, like Daryl Morey flying out to Mike D'Antoni's house with Tillman Fertitta by his side and hammering out a deal, only to find out that deal is not, you know, it doesn't matter anymore because the agent wasn't there, right? Like, and that's kind of what you've seen with Mike D'Antoni's contract negotiations. They've been very public. His camp has been very smart in putting it out there that he's been treated wrong or whatever. And I think, as far as organizationally, like the best move going forward is probably to bring him back. I mean, here's what I always say when you're thinking about firing a head coach, who are you going to replace him with? Can you find a meaningful upgrade from him on the market? And most of the time, when you're dealing with Hall of Fame head coaches, which is what Mike D'Antoni is, you're not going to find a better head coach in the market. You're talking about gambling on younger guys, pretty much.
Yeah, and you're talking about a head coach that the players love to play for. You hear nothing but good things out of James Harden, Russell Westbrook, the rest of the Rockets. Everybody's always got something great to say about Mike D'Antoni. He empowers his players. So for all the frustrations that Rockets fans, you know, have had or currently have at one time or another with MDA, myself included, you know, he is a guy who brings out the best in his players. And I think that's something that we don't give him credit for enough, you know, as the coach of the Houston Rockets. So I think that's probably a good spot for us to stop things up at. So, Solomon, please do us all a favor. Let us know where we can find your abundant amount of content at, because you've got so many different channels where you cover the team.
Yeah, I mean, you could just follow me on Twitter, and I'll tweet it out. It's at Solomon Ali NBA. I tweet out the podcast links. I tweet out the article links. I tweet out the newsletter links. You can find all that stuff on there.
Absolutely. Well, for everybody who stopped by for our second ever Locked On Live show, I sincerely appreciate it. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you enjoyed being able to ask questions and kind of chat with Solomon and myself and kind of talk about the game. But, you know, be sure to stay tuned to Locked On Rockets and to Red Nation Hoops as we provide you, you know, updates, analysis, breakdowns of the Rockets as they kind of, you know, maneuver their way through this 2020 bubble postseason. But for today's show, that's going to do it. So as always, thank you so much for listening. We look forward to having you back right here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball.